This podcast is a 98 Studios production.
Hey, it's Christy. Welcome back to Do the Work. Today and every day, we will talk about things that really matter. You, your thoughts, your feelings, and your experiences. Relationships are what matter most, and they can be complicated. If you'd like a better connection with yourself, with others, and with God, you are in the right place. So glad you're here. Welcome back to Do the Work. I'm so thankful to be here today with Dr. Jill Manning. And Dr. Manning, I just have to tell you, when I was thinking about preparing for this podcast with you, I want to go back to when I first started my podcast. And I thought, you know what? I need to get some guests on that can really help us understand some deeper issues. And I thought of you, and I felt like I was literally like just throwing a pebble into the ocean, like, okay, maybe, you know, but really not believing that it would happen. And when you responded with a, I would be happy to, I can't tell you what that meant to me as someone who was starting something new and vulnerable. And your generosity, because I know who you are. I know what you do. I know where you've been. I know it. And I just want to say thank you for who you are as a person, first and foremost, and for your generosity to me to come the first time and to come this time again. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you for such a kind opening. And Christy, I'm back a second time because you're an outstanding interviewer. So, you know, to your credit, thank you. You've really created a just high quality and engaging platform that's doing a lot of good. So thank you.
Thank you, Jill, so much. I want to share just a little bit about you. Dr. Jill Manning is a licensed marriage and family therapist who specializes in working with individuals who have been sexually betrayed through infidelity or compulsive sexual behavior. For over two decades, her work has been featured in numerous peer-reviewed research journals, television programs, documentaries, radio shows, podcasts, and magazine articles, including the Oprah magazine. I'm just going to say that again. While serving as a social science fellow at the Heritage Foundation in Washington, D.C., she was invited to testify before a U.S. Senate subcommittee about the harms of pornography on the family. A native of Calgary, Alberta, Canada, she currently lives in Colorado with her husband and two daughters. And she is very much professional, but she got the cutest bangs I've seen in a long time. So I'm sharing that too today. Thank you. Thank you again so much for being here. I just feel incredibly grateful. Okay. I just came from a funeral. And as I sat in the funeral, I thought to myself, we're all headed here. Like every one of us are headed to this. This is in all of our life stories, we are headed to that transition into the next phase of our lives. And I thought, I was thinking about this person who had passed on. And also, I knew I was coming here to have this conversation with you, Dr. Manning. And I just, my thought was, all we have when we leave are the relationships that we built while we were here. He didn't take one thing with him, but there was a whole room full of individuals who loved him and cared about him. And as I thought about our conversation, because today we're going to talk about developmental immaturity issues, and that might sound a little high and not understandable to a lot of people, right? But I feel so grateful that you will come and talk about it. I hear from all different places in my life, personal, business, and in my religious space, lots of different feelings about therapy or coaching or any space where someone is talking about their emotional health. And there is very often a resistance to that. Dr. Manning, can you just speak to that for just a second before we move in to this deeper space of developmental immaturity? Why with emotional? I mean, if someone was telling me the other day, you know what? He could take a whole car apart and put the car back together. Or, you know, if someone wants to learn how to, I put in a faucet in my sink. So I'm pulling up YouTube. My son and I, and we eventually had to call my nephew, but in the end, we were trying to learn how to put a sink, faucet in our sink. Why are we so willing to look at so many different areas in our life and get help? But this is a tough one. Why do people push against this?
That's a big question. So we may have to answer this in layers today. And first, I just want to give my sympathies to whoever it is that you lost. And actually, a funeral is a good launch point for this conversation, interestingly enough, because every single one of us enters this world immature. We're young. We're supposed to be young when we enter this world as little babies. And what's interesting, Christy, is not all of us will mature. Everyone will age. Every single person will age, but not everyone will mature and grow up. Our biological age is different than our emotional, psychological age. And I think going to your question, right? Age will amplify the areas that we're stuck in. Age is in some ways a really powerful amplifier. And so that's important to keep in mind, that the things we avoid will amplify. They don't go away. And I think to your question, why do some people avoid the work, to the name of your podcast? There's a lot of reasons. Some of it is people don't know what that involves. They're uncomfortable. They're avoidant. They, humans by nature will avoid pain. They may fear it. A lot of fear. They may be proud. They may not have the humility to really look where they could deeply improve or change. It can be easier to blame others or want other people to change. But to really do the deep work of maturing is a tall spiritual task, but also a relational task. And as we grow, if we highlight for a moment the marriage relationship, which we typically in our culture enter in when we are adults, that is the most demanding and complex relationship that any of us will have. And yet it demands the most maturity of us. Marriage will also put a floodlight on the areas where we are stuck or immature. Would you agree with that, Christy? That it's like a crucible?
100%.
Right? That is a vehicle, I believe, in my belief system, is intended to help us grow and mature if we will allow it. That's the key thing. Will we allow it? Will we have the humility and the openness to allow that complex relationship called marriage to highlight where we need to grow and then do that work? So let's talk what developmental maturity is. Can we go there? I'm just defining this because I know that that sounds like a weird term.
I'd love it. I'd love to go there.
So, let's start with talking what developmental immaturity is, and then contrast that with what developmental maturity is. And I want to start by saying this is not, I lay no claim to the theories and ideas that I'm going to present and talk about today. These go back many, many, many decades in terms of psychological research. We have the classic, psychoanalyst John Bowlby, Mary Ainsworth, Eric Erickson, really the psychological greats who many decades ago were studying what is developmental maturity and immaturity. So I just want to say that. And in most more recent times, we've had great thinkers like Pia Melody, and more currently, Dr. Lindsay Gibson, Dr. Eddie Caparucci, and Terry Real that are focusing on this. And I'm mentioning those names because if anyone listening that's interested in diving into this deeper and may not be interested in therapy, they could read books by these individuals and really go quite a distance with these topics. So we're going to start at birth. When any human is born, there's five key traits to what we call the nature of the child. And I'm going to be pulling a lot of this information from Pia Melody's work. So I want to give her credit where credit's due.
Great.
And she developed this, developmental model of immaturity. And what she said was that when we are born, we have five key traits that comprise the nature of the child. We are all born valuable, vulnerable, imperfect, dependent, and spontaneous and open. Those are the five things that really are characteristic of when a little one is born. And what happens is over the life cycle, and especially in those 0 to 18 years, life happens. We get bullied. We get hurt, you know, and hopefully we get enough of our needs met that we keep moving forward. But all of us, Christy, we are not going to reach the age of 18 being unscathed by life.
When you said we get bullied, we get bruised. Yes. And a thousand, so many more things that affect our reality, right? Because someone might be listening and say, I wasn't bruised. I wasn't bullied. But maybe you were put on a pedestal, which is almost just as damaging as being bullied or bruised, right? Like, so there's just like, don't count yourself out if you weren't bullied and, you know,
correct,
or had like big trauma in your life.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because it's both what we call in therapy world, big T and small T traumas that shape a lot of our personalities and how we show up in the world. So relational trauma, which is really what we're talking about today,
yes,
the things that happen,
yes,
and also the things that didn't happen that we needed. You know, we may have needed more affection. We may have needed more presence from an adult. Or maybe we had too much criticism, not enough affirmation. We need more of us to understand that those things are relational traumas too. It's not just outright abuse or neglect. There's a lot that encompasses.
Good.
And in fact, Pia would say anything less than nurturing can have a traumatic effect on and shaping effect on a human. And so if we're born and that's our true nature, those five traits I just described, as life unfolds, we start developing often, many of us, five core issues. And these five core issues stem from trauma, big and small. And these are the five traits. These five core issues describe what developmental immaturity is, where we get stuck. The first is self-esteem issues. We get stuck in struggling with esteeming ourselves appropriately. That may, to tie in with your earlier point, Christy, maybe we esteem ourselves too much. We're raised in a home where we're taught our poop doesn't stink. We're better than other people. Or we may be shamed and emotionally abused in such a way that we're not shown and reflected back the value we have inherently. So all of these core issues that I'll describe, it can be too much or too little. You know, they're all on a spectrum and a continuum. The second is boundaries.
Yes.
Having appropriate boundaries with the self and also with others. We need to be able to protect our core identity, but also protect things incoming from other people. When other people are being offensive or abusive, or when we're being offensive or abusive, our boundary systems are what keep that in check. Third is reality. We can develop reality issues where we tend to think we need to be really good at being bad or perfect, where we have a hard time accepting reality on reality's terms. And reality, boy, that's a big conversation. But that's, in a nutshell, accepting that we are human, right? That we're perfectly imperfect. That our weaknesses do not mean that we are less than, but our strengths don't mean we're better than. Our strengths ease the way, but our weaknesses give us material to work on and keep us humble. And when someone's in reality, they're able to think their thoughts, feel their feelings, be aware of their body, and be aware, they have awareness of how they show up in the world and how they impact other people. Like, you know, am I being too loud? Am I being offensive in some way? There's some self-awareness on board with that. And, you know, the fourth core issue is dealing with dependency. That's dealing with how well and healthy do we get our needs and wants met? Do I show up in the world needless, wantless? Oh, no, I need nothing. It's all about other people. I'm here to serve 100%. Or are we too needy? It's all about us, or we don't have enough self-reliance on board, right? And fifth is issues with containment and moderation. In a nutshell, going to extremes to show up in life, enjoy life, or to try to get our needs met. So each of these are on a continuum. And in, you know, if I were to summarize those, when we are being mature, when we're growing up, we're getting centered and lined up in the center of each of those. Let me describe what that means. If I'm centered and moderate with self-esteem, that means I can appropriately esteem myself and others. I can see my inherent worth and I recognize the inherent worth in others. I don't go wobbly, or when I do, I'm able to grab that.
Yes. And would you say, like, I'm able to, yeah, I can value others because I value me. I can see their value instead of fearing or unsure that, you know, does my value decrease because they have, I can see that they're valued or whatever.
Yes. Well, and what happens a lot in our culture, Christy, is we get sucked into what's called other self-esteem, other esteem, I mean. And when we're in other esteem, which is sometimes the only esteem many people are walking around with, that's when they're caught up in accomplishment, money in the bank, what car they drive, their title or position, where they serve in their faith community, how accomplished or their children are, and it's outside themselves. And why that's so dangerous? It's okay to feel enjoyment and satisfaction from those things. Those things can be enjoyable and fun. However, they're outside of ourselves and they're fragile. They're prone to be taken away. You know, money can be lost. Kids fail. Different things happen. And if our self-esteem is rooted in outside of ourselves, then when life happens, we're going to be really wobbly. So learning to really inherently value myself, understanding that you and I, there's nothing we can do to increase or decrease our inherent worth. And if I deeply believe that, I'm going to show up in the world in a very different way. I'm going to take care of myself. I'm going to be respectful of others. I'm going to do what I need in a day to nourish and rest and hydrate and take breaks and have fun. And there's a balance. So we know we're in that mature, centered place. When we're centered, there's balance. We feel peace. We can feel joy. And there's a flow that can come into our lives. And so I want to go back to the question you started with, Christy, because it ties in beautifully with that third core issue of reality. When someone believes, I don't need help, I don't need growth, there's a rigidity in that I often see in my office, or the spouse of a client is like, no way, I'm not engaged in therapy. And I want to be clear, as a therapist, I don't believe therapy is the only way that can affect change or be of help to people. I don't believe that. But just even that closed offness to that we're human, that all of us have stuff to work on, that really can be a relational trauma in that person's relationships. Because we're not in reality. We're all perfectly imperfect. So if I believe I don't need any work or help, I'm sliding into a really interesting, immature posture. It's hard to be relational with that, because if I'm fine, I don't need any help, how does anyone else deeply relate or connect or be intimate with me? Right? If I'm beyond the pale and I'm totally fine, how can anyone really connect?
Someone would answer that, like, just like figure it out, like love me for who I am would be a really, like, would, it is a common response when someone else is inviting another person to just see or learn something different or be willing to be open to another way of thinking. They would just, often the response could be, just love me for who I am. And that, again, speaks to the developmental immaturity. Yes?
Yes. Yes. I would agree with that. I would agree with that. So let's be clear. Developmental immaturity is not without significant ramifications and consequences over the lifespan. If we don't at some point start to grow up emotionally, we will run into many secondary issues and things that start to unfold. We see addictions, mood disorders, illnesses, anger, resentment. We see negative control. That's a big one. Trying to control things that are not within my power to control. That can involve spirituality issues. Really having a hard time living in integrity and deeply being honest with myself. Disconnecting from values. Going to extremes. And we see this snowball. And that starts snowballing and pours into relationship issues where we have intimacy struggles. We're esteeming relationships either too little or too much, right? That may sound strange to a lot of people. It is possible to esteem a marriage or a child so much that we completely lose ourselves in that, even if things are toxic or abusive, right? We go to extremes. That's really one of the key themes here. And for anyone that may be listening, thinking, you know, that's a bunch of psychobabble. That's like, yes. That is not for me. Here's something I want to underscore.
Yes.
In the last year, I've had the privilege and blessing of attending a Hindu dance festival. I've attended a synagogue and just a beautiful sermon by two rabbis, multiple Christian meetings and worship. And I know that in various sacred texts, and in the main religious bodies that I'm aware of and belief systems, maturing and growing up is a core element of religious faith and belief. Now, as a Christian, I'm going to pull on an example, but not in a religious context. I'm pulling this in therapeutically. The Apostle Paul in the New Testament, okay, and I'm this is with my therapy hat on. And if someone's not Christian listening, that's okay, because the principle transcends any one faith. And I want to read something that Paul said, Christy, in chapter 13 of 1 Corinthians. And he said, "When I was a child, I spake as a child. I understood as a child. Mm-hmm. I thought as a child. But when I became an adult," and I'm switching that word, "I put away childish things." That is a theme. We could pull that from verses from various sacred books and beliefs, but the core theme is the same, that one of our purposes and reasons for being is to grow. And in that growth, we mature, where we can be more balanced and centered, more relational, more attuned, more aware, awake. One of my biggest fears is to die not awake. Like to die not having processed my life or really understood who am I and what impact have I had in the world and those I love. That's one of my biggest fears. So I think that's part of my passion for this topic. I'll also say this because, you know, given the introduction you gave of my work, I do work. All of my clients have been sexually betrayed. And here's something that I commonly see people slip into, Christy, that I hope is helpful for someone listening. Often people will come into therapy, those that are open for help, and in the work I do, they come in the wake of a crisis of a sexual betrayal, often because of infidelity or compulsive pornography use. And they will mistake the crisis for the problem. The crisis of betrayal is what brought them in, but that's not the problem. And in the vast majority of cases, it's actually developmental immaturity. When you really get down to the core, acting out sexually, that's the symptom. That's not the problem. Mm. And why that matters, why is Jill saying this? Well, I'm saying this because where we put our efforts and our energy matters. We have finite energy, and we can be focused on the wrong thing and trying to answer the wrong questions. Someone will come in and say, "Jill, I'm not going to feel at peace or happy unless my husband stops looking at porn. He needs to be sober before we can have a good marriage again." Okay, but I work with people at all spans of the healing cycle of betrayal. There's a lot of people who are sober that are no longer acting out, but they're still struggling relationally. And Pia Melody, who is one of the clinical architects, if you will, of the Meadows behavioral health approach to these very issues, her observation over a long period of time in the 70s, 80s, 90s was that developmental immaturity is really at the root of this. That it's when these core issues with self-esteem, boundaries, reality, needs and wants, and containment and moderation, if those don't ever get dealt with, they will bleed and grow and snowball into these types of issues. If you think of what sexual betrayal is, it's selfish. It's an extreme way of trying to get a need met. It's not in reality. It's total fantasy, right? It lacks boundaries. It's trying to be sexual or relate sexually to someone you don't even know. You could go down all those issues. And unless we deal with those things, someone may be sober, but they're going to be like the, what we call a dry drunk, right? Someone, mm-hmm. an alcoholic may stop drinking, but if they don't learn how to be relational in new ways and deal with the core issues that led to the drinking or the mental illnesses that led to the drinking, they will not deeply heal or have satisfying relationships. So this is why this topic matters so much. Because too many people, Christy, are mistaking the crisis or what brings them in to the point of, I need help. They're mistaking that for really what the deep roots are. And often it is developmental immaturity.
Oh, I have so many questions. And what you just said is so important to understand, because not engaging in the addiction is a good thing, but it is not going to change you or your relationships. It's not going to heal what has been hurt or wounded. It's just like the addiction is the low-hanging fruit, right? It's the thing that exposes all of this that you're saying inside. So Dr. Manning, you said they're trying to get a need met. And that's really hard for a lot of people to understand. Like, what do you mean they're trying to get a need met? Like, they're successful at work. They're really like they serve in important, I'm doing air quotes, important callings in their religion, or they, you know, are a bigwig in the neighborhood or community. What do you mean they're trying to get their needs met? This person doesn't have any needs. What do you mean by that?
Okay, so all of us have needs, and we have core needs to be heard, to be seen, to be loved, to belong, to be validated. And there's a whole lot of people out there self-medicating voids in those areas, the things they didn't get enough of or that happened and they didn't have enough support. Because keep in mind, developmental immaturity is rooted in relational trauma. We develop those core issues and we become stuck developmentally in younger stages and ego states because of relational trauma. So when you peel away, okay, what is the alcoholic or what is someone who's compulsive with pornography trying to meet the need for? Sometimes they're trying to regulate strong emotions that they've never learned how to express or identify or manage in healthy ways because it was never modeled for them. Sometimes they're seeking validation. That fantasy, even if they know it's not real, to have that fantasy illusion of someone really wants me, the attention, right? I go into disclosure meetings almost monthly where those that have sexually acted out in an unfaithful way will outline all the story from beginning to end. And one of the common things I've noticed in that is it's often people seeking attention because they don't have a sense of their own inherent worth, and they're looking for that from someone outside themselves. Right? If she gives me attention, then I get that little those drops in my bucket, because they don't feel connected to that internally. So there's a whole host of needs, Christy, that we'll try to meet in unhealthy ways if we're not in a mature, healthy place.
That's really helpful. It's interesting because it is hard for us to connect that someone who has so many worldly accolades could still choose, you know, they have this behavior that's still really painful to themselves and to those that they love. Because of what you just said, we're humans. And it feels good when someone says, hey, you're the person that I want to be with, even if it's not real.
Right.
That we get a little dopamine hit. Will you just give us a few examples about what you've met? We talked about relational trauma a little bit, but can you just give us three or four examples of what relational trauma could look like when in your childhood?
So I'll give a couple of examples of big T traumas and little T traumas. Okay. Because sometimes people only think of trauma in a very extreme way, you know, war, natural disasters, sexual abuse kind of thing. So some significant big T traumas that are common: physical abuse, you know, being spanked with objects, being hit, being hurt by someone that's supposed to protect and love you. You know, that's certainly a key relational trauma there that really messes with attachment. When the person that's supposed to care for me, love me, protect me is the one hurting me, that cuts deep. That cuts very deep. Mm-hmm. Another example of a big T trauma would be sexual abuse. And sexual abuse, I mean, I'm going to expect that listeners understand, you know, the realm of sexual abuse, but that can be very overt, but also covert. Maybe someone lives in a home where there's a lot of sexual innuendo or sexual jokes or just age inappropriate content being discussed. That would all be considered sexual abuse, where a child is receiving overwhelming information without being taught and guided. Okay. Witnessing violence can be an example of a big T trauma. Now, small T traumas may look like being criticized. And maybe it's not huge. It's just like drip, drip, drip a little bit every day. You know, a kid never feels like they're enough. It can also be indulgence. People don't think of that. You know, being overly protected, being overly indulged, being spoiled, where a child grows up thinking they can get whatever they want, not having enough affection, you know, a parent that's very physically or emotionally absent. Or let's say it's not even intentional. I grew up in the military, Christy. Boy, I met some phenomenal men and women growing up and people that were serving their countries and would have loved to have been home more. And by choice, we're not choosing to, wanting to be away from their home. But that's a significant relational trauma. I know for me it was, to have a parent that was gone a lot because of work. Yeah. Now, do I think my dad was malicious in that? Or, oh, I want to spend not a lot of time with Jill. No, but that was a relational trauma nonetheless. So I think big T, small T traumas, they all have relational traumatic effects. And part of our work is understanding what happened to me. Why do I show up in the world the way I do? Where in those five core issues do I need to grow? Where do I feel stuck?
That's really good. I just want to state the core issues again: the self-esteem issues, thinking I'm better or less than, the boundary issues, either I'm too vulnerable or invulnerable. You know, honestly, I mean, boundaries, I think so many of us were just raised to make sure we don't upset anybody. You know, that's an issue. If we don't learn how to speak honestly, right? We're just taught, like, just make sure no one's bothered by you, almost.
Right. Yeah.
That's a boundary issue. Reality issues: bad or rebellious versus good or perfect. Dependency issues: too dependent versus anti-dependent, or needless or wantless. That's a big one too. And we call it nice. We call that, often we call that peacemaking, or, you know, just whatever. You can just get along with anybody. It's that beautiful trait of peacemaking, that's that strength that becomes a weakness in that core issue. And then the moderation, or moderation and containment issues. You're either out of control or controlling others. I just wanted to say them again, because hopefully anyone who's listening to this, they're connecting. And what, wouldn't every human connect to this in one way or another?
Yes. Now, here's something that, just so we're connecting dots. And I know this may be controversial for some that are new to this content. And if anyone kind of pulls back with what I'm about to say, I'd encourage you to read, you know, Pia Melody's work or Lindsay Gibson's work, Terry Real or Eddie Caparucci, and get into it, because what traditionally has been understood as codependence is really relational trauma. And when we have relational trauma, we'll show up in these ways and engage in some of these patterns that really don't serve us well or our relationships well. So I want to make that connection, because for many years in my career, Christy, I work within a betrayal trauma model. And because I had never pursued training in codependence, I thought, oh, that's terrible. That's another whole camp that, nope, stay away. And there's a lot of people that find it insulting. And I will say there's been misuse and abuse of that word. Definitely. Mm-hmm. I would be one of the first to agree with that. But I have deep respect and admiration for what Pia Melody did. I really think she was way ahead of her time, long before we had fMRI scans and a lot that we know now about neuroscience. She understood that trauma, relational trauma, and its effect on the developing brain can get us stuck. And it gets us stuck in these five core ways. And those five ways are traditionally what we would call codependent patterns. Now, I don't think there's any shame in owning that. And if someone prefers to call that relational trauma rather than using that word, that's totally fine. I had the blessing and privilege of meeting Pia in two different trainings in person. I asked her directly if she were to write her book today, which is called Facing Codependence. If she were to write her book today, would she title it that? And she's in her mid-80s now, and she said no. I said, what would you title it instead? And she said, I would have called it Facing Relational Trauma. And I love that, because to me, that's the bridge between the betrayal trauma camp, the purists, and the pure, you know, very strong addiction model, codependent focused. This is the bridge. It's all trauma. And so dealing with those deep, you know, dealing with those core pieces does allow us to grow and develop and to have enriching relationships and to not just age, but to mature and to grow up, so that at the end of our life, whenever that is, it'll be different for each of us, that we can be awake at that point.
Oh, I love that bridge. Codependency, like you said, has been used in ways that when that label feels like something's wrong with me. Mm-hmm. And when you bridge that right there, that codependency is just relational trauma. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, yeah. Turns out I'm human. It turns out I was raised by humans. I had siblings and friends that were humans. And we didn't talk about a lot of this for a long time. So that's a beautiful bridge for me. You write the book. You write the book. I'm inviting you.
That'll be a long wait.
Cheers. I'm nominating you.
Yeah, but there's unnecessary division in sometimes the healing work and healing communities. I think from what I'm seeing, I've been in therapeutic work for 25 years now, and there's more commonality than there is difference. And I think there's different ways to climb the mountain for sure. There's not one way to get help, and whatever that looks like for people, but to be moving forward, to be growing, and recognize every single one of us will get stuck in certain areas, and we'll get triggered, we'll get pulled back psychologically into a younger state that's usually tied in with something that happened or didn't happen that needed to at a certain age.
Yes. Okay. I want to get to, so you talked about the core issues. I want to get to secondary symptoms and relational problems. How do we see it? How does this show up in our lives?
Well, when those core issues don't just go away magically. They don't go away magically. And so Pia observed, rightly so, that as time goes on, there will be secondary symptoms that show up. as a result of those core issues escalating and exacerbating over time. And five of those things that we commonly see are negative control, resentment and raging, spirituality issues, which is not to be confused with religious issues, addiction, mood disorders, or physical illnesses, and intimacy issues. Those are common ways that we will see life become unmanageable. Often, though, Christy, we know that the majority of people that enter therapy do so because there's a relationship in crisis. Parent-child, spouse. It's often relationships that bring us to our knees and say, I need help. And that's okay, you know, if that's the pathway for people coming in. But what happens with many approaches to help is that we focus on the branches of the issue, and we may be dealing with communication, there's nothing wrong with the topic of communication. There's a lot of good techniques and things that people can learn, communication skills. But unless we get to the roots, get to those secondary issues and the core issues, I don't see people or myself really changing. So that's why those core, if all someone took from today was a growing awareness of those five core issues and knowing there's ways to address each of those, I think that would be a huge success. But to, you know, to further that, as I see you wanting to do, which I fully support, is those core issues, if left unchecked and not intervened with, they will grow into secondary issues, which will lead to problems in our relationships, which is where we typically see people come into care. And in relationships, those five things start showing up as relational esteem issues, as I talked about before, esteeming a relationship too much or too little. You know, let me give an example of that. If someone's been betrayed repeatedly, chronically, you know, I meet people nowadays where their spouses acted out or had affairs in the hundreds. That sounds weird, but these are true accounts. Okay. Or they've been compulsively acting out in various ways for decades. Okay. That's an example where one person in a relationship has not been esteeming the relationship enough. They've been boundaryless and shameless and just acting out like a sprinkler system with no boundaries. And if a partner says, I'm going to stay with you no matter what, she may be esteeming, commonly, I work with females more than men, she may be esteeming the relationship too much and not putting enough boundary in place, saying, you know, no, you can't treat me this way. You can't put my life at risk in this way. So that's a really dangerous combination that I commonly see, Christy, where one person's not esteeming it enough, one's esteeming it too much. I just wanted to give that practical example because that sometimes doesn't make
sense. I love that you showed the developmental immaturity on both sides. You know, it's easy to maybe see it in the person who's acting out in the hundreds, but to see that developmental immaturity in the person who's okay with that, because the relationship matters, you know, reign supreme instead of reality reigning supreme. Yeah.
So there was a study that recently came out like 2 weeks ago about betrayed partners. Mm-hmm. And most of the people in the sample were female. I think 98% were female, if I'm remembering that correctly. And what was interesting is they asked these women, how many relationships have you been in which you've been sexually betrayed? Christy, it shocked me. The majority of the sample had been one. I've been in one relationship where I've been betrayed. But the upper limit of the number of relationships was five. Some people had five relationships where they had been sexually betrayed. Now, here, I'm going to say something that may be controversial, but I'm meaning it in a helpful spirit. When someone has had five relationships in adulthood, that is not just betrayal. That is not just betrayal. Now, I do not believe that sexual betrayal is ever the betrayed party's fault. I don't believe that. I don't see that.
I don't either.
Okay, so I want to be clear. This is not saying it's someone's fault they're being betrayed. But I think there's a very strong case for developmentally, there's something going on with self-esteem and boundaries and being in reality and getting needs and wants met in healthy ways and moderation and containment with someone that's been in 5 relationships where they've been betrayed. So this really matters. My typical approach in my work is, yes, I think a strictly betrayal trauma approach is really effective on the front end, is we're bringing people in and it's a soft place to land, and we validate and we create safety and boundaries, and this is not your fault. But looking long-term, if we don't deal with some of the developmental immaturity that may be going on for the betrayed partner, long-term, they're not going to effectively really deeply bond and also be protected. So this, again, I realize this is controversial because sometimes we've gotten into a narrative where there's this strong victimhood around betrayal. And there's a place for that. But going the long game, yes, that people can feel empowered and protected and healthy and reach real intimacy in relationships, I think we must, on both sides of the equation, look at developmental immaturity and where people are stuck. Because some people out there, Christy, there's something really wrong with their picker, right? They're being drawn or bringing in people, allowing people into their life that are very toxic or narcissistic or abusive or even sociopathic. Whoa. Okay. We need to learn how to grow ourselves up where we can be protecting ourselves from incoming threat like that. Now, I'm not suggesting everyone can see this coming. I'm not suggesting that, but when someone has a pattern in their life, like I referenced, 5 adult relationships, there's something going on there. Yes. So I hope this conversation can spur some thought, shake things up for listeners that may be thinking developmental immaturity is only for addicts to think about, or those that are sexually acting out. It's not. It's for all of us. I include myself in this equation readily. And I'm actively working, Christy, on areas where I show up immaturely in my parenting, or where I get triggered and reactive. It's work for all of us. So I really want to normalize this. We're all human. We're all in this together. And I think if we want a rich life emotionally and relationally, we can choose to age, or we can choose to grow and mature.
Oh, I'm giving a standing ovation. Dr. Manning, if I had to rename my podcast, which I not, but this is the purpose for my podcast, is to say every human on the planet, we will get older, but we will not mature unless we choose it. And sometimes choosing it, you know, I often, after I record a podcast, I have a vulnerability hangover, like, oh boy, what did I just share? And I feel that, and I share it because I really want people to see that I'm a very normal, average person, but I'm trying to show what that work looks like inside of us. And so to share, and then to have guests on that will share, and then to have professionals that will talk about, this is a one step at a time process. This isn't a, hey, we're going to do a 6-week course and then we ought to be good to go from then on. I believe this is past this life process, that this emotionally, developmentally maturing is really why we're here. And our life experiences sidetrack us. And so to be humble and honest enough to say, I'm ready to look. And I love that you said, okay, you don't have to walk into a therapist's office. Go read a book. You know, go, you know, ask someone that you trust. Show me where I had an experience with, I have one daughter and I love her with my whole soul. And we were having, we were watching something the other day, and I was sharp and very quick to kind of point out a weakness, which I've worked really hard to not show up that way. And it took me a day or two after asking for help from someone that I trust, like, help me see my part, to be able to go back and say, I'm ready to hear how I've affected you. Tell me how my show up just affected you. Because you know how I showed up? I showed up about 13. I showed up about 13 and I needed to be seen and I needed to be understood. But I recognize, like, that's not who I want to be. I want to be someone that can talk about hard conversations, have hard conversations about difficult topics. And I want always for her to feel love from me. So that was my developmental immaturity.
I love that example. And what a profound moment, though. I mean, small but profound in you revealing your humanity to her and being able to circle back and apologize and be open. How have I impacted you? Tell me. I want to know. I mean, that's such a moment of maturity right there. And it's, you know, when we're really understanding this, it's not, it evolves and it grows, and we're going to have moments, every single one of us. I think daily we will have moments where we regress, when we're tired, stressed, just done with the day. Things are going to yank us out of that centered zone. But in our maturity, our growing capacity to mature, we recognize it, we can own it, we can circle back and say, I'm sorry. And that's all part of this. And for anyone listening that may feel overwhelmed by, I mean, we've put out a lot of ideas here today.
Yeah.
Focus on one, because here, this is true. All five of those core issues are interrelated. They're all tied and connected to one another. You know, for example, boundaries. If I'm struggling with self-esteem, I'll struggle with boundaries because we protect what we value. If I don't value myself, I'm not going to instinctively feel I need to protect myself. So you can start with one, and it will improve. It will pull in a good direction all of the others. And so to choose one, to say, okay, this month or this week, I want to really keep an eye out with reality, when I minimize or deny, or I'm going one up or one down, when I'm being really dissociated and because I'm too stressed or too overwhelmed, and just choose one and say, okay, I'm going to, let's say it was self-esteem. Okay, I'm going to read things or remind myself of things on a daily basis that affirm my inherent worth. It may be a quote or a scripture or a phrase. There may be a picture of myself, of oneself that you really like or connect with. I love that girl. Whatever that looks like for you, you know, choose one and know that they are interconnected. You can work smart, choose baby steps, and this, it's a process. And we're always going to be evolving, and big things will happen, like births, deaths, marriages, crises, losses. And sometimes we cycle back and we need to work on something again. And that's part of it too.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you from me. And I'm hoping from so many others who are willing to just take that step that you just suggested. I can't express. Go follow Dr. Jill Manning on social media. You're on Instagram. Anywhere else? I'm not on a lot. So are you on
LinkedIn and Instagram?
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you
from the bottom of my soul. You will have many choices in your day and in your week. I hope you'll choose to do the work.
If you'd like to be a guest on the podcast, share a written experience, or ask me a question, go to coachchristy.life and fill out the podcast questionnaire, and we'll be in touch with you soon. There are no dumb questions or experiences, just opportunities to learn and do the work. Have a great week.